Struggling to communicate with your co-parent? That's why Peaceful Co-Parenting Messenger was created. It's a communication tool for all co-parents, but especially those who are in high conflict situations. I always tell co-parents who ask, sign up for Peaceful Co-Parenting Messenger as early as possible in your separation and divorce process, because you never know when you're going to need a more robust communication tool that allows you to set boundaries on the communication you have with your co-parent. Are you getting messages that look like war and peace? It's not a text message. It's the length of a novel. Set the brief chat limitation in the app and keep those messages short and to the point. It's about the kids, right? Keep the focus there. You can also limit the number of messages you receive in a day and other nice a la carte features meant to bring sanity to your life. You deserve that, and your kids do too. Peaceful Co-Parenting Messenger in the Apple App Store and soon in the Google Play Store. Go to peacefulparentapp.com for more information.
This week on Peaceful Co-Parenting Podcast.
When they're not with you in your custody time and they're with your ex, the guilt around what's going on over there. And I think as moms, we get so worried about the little things like, did they really go to bed at 7:30 at their bedtime? Did he feed them pizza 3 times this week? You know, and so it's hard to let go and decide what things are truly important and what things are just okay. It's going to be okay if they eat pizza 3 times this week. And so we talk through a lot of that, but that all boils down to guilt.
Welcome to Peaceful Co-Parenting Podcast, where we discuss strategies and tips to improve your co-parenting situation, especially if it's high conflict. I'm Bianca Ballo, co-parent, mother, and entrepreneur, creator of Peaceful Co-Parenting Messenger app, and believer in turning challenging situations into something positive. This week, we're joined by Jackie Miller. We had a great conversation about post-separation abuse several weeks back. I'm honored to have Jackie back on the podcast today to discuss divorce guilt and the impact on co-parenting. It's a great topic today, but before we dive in, let me introduce you to Jackie Miller. She's a high conflict divorce coach, a mother, and a co-parent. She's also the host of her own podcast called Out of Crazy Town, Your Guide to Divorcing a Narcissist. Hey, Jackie, how are you?
I'm good, Bianca. How are you?
I'm doing good today. I'm so glad to have you back on the podcast. How's the high conflict divorce coaching going?
It's going well. I'm busy. I'm very busy. Hopefully helping a lot of people, but it's going very well. Thank you.
Yeah, I have heard that the high conflict cases are increasing, in fact, which saddens me, but actually I'm not too surprised with the state of our world right now. There's just a lot of stress and uncertainty, and I think that can spill over into co-parenting and even just how divorces are going.
Absolutely. I mean, we definitely anticipated with people being sort of stuck at home under the same roof where we had our busy lives, maybe to distract us from things in our marriages that were maybe not so great. And then, yeah, being under the same roof and not being able to get away from one another really shined a spotlight on some people's marriages and the issues in them. And, you know, now they're deciding that they can't continue down that road. And so I think there is that dynamic. There's definitely been an uptick.
Well, I think you have a unique perspective on the topic today because you do help people right in the midst of a divorce and a high conflict divorce. So it's so super fresh. It's so raw. So tell me, do you see divorce guilt when you're working with some of your clients?
Absolutely. You know, what I see in terms of guilt is it starts way before, usually say my client initiated the divorce, way before they actually utter the words divorce, because right, they've been thinking about it for a long time. And one of the things holding them back from executing it is the amount of guilt that they have about what it's going to do to their children. And especially in high conflict, because they're thinking, oh my gosh, and then I'm assuming this other parent is going to have alone time with them. They're going to have some custody. And my children will be alone with them and I'll be not there to protect them anymore from whatever issues I have with my spouse. So yeah, the guilt starts even before.
That's such a good point. As I do think it's not just after you filed or when you're co-parenting, it's before, and you run this scenario through your head. And
absolutely.
And you're right. It could be the very reason why you haven't maybe filed for divorce is you're racked with guilt. Yeah, about the marriage not really working out or not being there for your kids or, you know, basically having a failure for a, you know, a marriage. I know I definitely felt that of just not willing to like admit that it wasn't working and it needed to end, but I didn't want to have a failure.
Yes, it felt like everything and it's completely overwhelming and guilt is such a huge part of it. So I love this topic today because I think a lot of us don't even realize how much guilt we're carrying around. Maybe we haven't labeled it or just sat down to really acknowledge it, but that I think is what drives a lot of our behaviors before the divorce, during the divorce, after the divorce, as a parent and a co-parent.
I think the topic was great today too, because in a high conflict divorce or just a regular divorce, there's so much that happens that's not within your control. Like a lot is going on and this person's doing this and whatever, your ex is doing that. But this is something that actually is totally in your control. It's like in your head of how you're thinking about what's going on. It's like you're doing it to yourself. And so I thought, let's examine this so that we can think about it maybe in a different way. And
absolutely.
Also like recognize it. Like I'm wondering, how do you recognize it when you're working with your clients or even like for yourself?
You know, one thing that I like to talk through with my clients is, well, first of all, we talk about, you know, what are the big issues? What are you worried about the most? And yes, guilt about, you know, their kids, the conflict that they're feeling between you and your ex when they're not with you in your custody time and they're with your ex, the guilt around what's going on over there. And I think as moms specifically, if, you know, we've been even the stay-at-home caretaker or even not stay-at-home, just the primary caretaker, we get so worried about the little things like, did they really go to bed at 7:30 at their bedtime? Did he feed them pizza three times this week? You know, and so it's hard to let go and decide what things are truly important and what things are just okay. It's going to be okay if they eat pizza three times this week. And so we talk through a lot of that, but that all boils down to guilt. Like, are they being fed properly? Are they getting enough rest? Are they, you know, this, are they that? And then I caused this, I put them in this position. So I think one of the biggest comforts to my client is knowing you're not alone. And that is high conflict or not high conflict, right? Like you just said, that doesn't matter. Just divorce in general. You're not alone. We are all feeling this and it is normal, you know? And so it's working through it and having someone to talk to and just talking through it.
Yeah, I definitely think talking through it is helpful with somebody who can say, you know, let's, how can we reframe this, you know, or do you really feel that way? Or I don't know, some good questions like that. But I love the point that it's connected to how we're co-parenting too, like the level of guilt and what we allow and like what we're focusing on and the pizza three times a week or the bedtimes and then how we're co-parenting too, because it spills over into that. And if that's what we're focusing on, we're not allowing ourselves to let go some of that little stuff. That's what we're focusing on. I think then the interactions between co-parents then can become stifled and negative with that stuff.
Right.
Rather than letting it go in your mind and also in your communication with your co-parent.
Absolutely. You know, I can list off a number of incidences that I let slide with my daughters. I just been going along in my marriage with two parents as normal. I probably wouldn't have let them get away with, you know, quote unquote, but I chose not to call them on it because I thought they've got so much stress in their life. I know they lied about this, but I know why. It's okay. I'm not going to call them on it. I have one example of my 16-year-old snuck out of the house and she doesn't know I know to this day, but I actually made a conscious choice not to call her on it. I know she went to her friend's house. I know why she went to that friend's house. I know she'd been dealing with a lot at her dad's house. So it's amazing the things that we do that we wouldn't do maybe under other circumstances or let our kids get away with because you're constantly asking yourself, you know, is this because of the divorce? Is this because of the situation I put them in?
Right. Another one of my own personal example, thank you for sharing that one, is that like when my boys would go over to their dad's house, they got a lot of screen time. You know, they loved all that screen time and they looked forward to it.
Yeah.
And so that was like hard in my heart to maybe feel like, well, they're going to start preferring the dad's house because because of all the screen time. And so then how did that affect how much screen time I was giving them? You know, because I was like 2 hour max, let's go outside and play. Let's do something else that like expands our brain.
Let's get some exercise. Let's breathe fresh air.
And then there's like that comparing the households, yeah. And it impacts what you're doing when it really shouldn't. And
right.
There's so many parallels actually to communicating too with your co-parent, because really how you respond to them shouldn't have anything to do with how they just responded to you. So like if they're attacking you, right, you try to maintain composure and just respond back without any kind of reflection of them, or like, you know, just stay calm, do your thing, right? Like do your thing. Don't let what they're doing
right
impact what you're doing. Same thing, like with what we're talking about. Also, like I totally didn't think it was fair that they had to experience these different versions of their own reality in these different homes.
Yep.
So it was just, it's hard to balance that and stay true to your own self.
Right, right. There's so many facets of what you just said in terms of, I think it's super common in after divorce that there's the fun household, right? Mm-hmm. Late bedtimes, more screen time, eat whatever you want. Right. And then there's the more, and it's not even strict. There's just the more, structured household that's put your phone down. Let's do your homework. And I have this conversation so many times with clients because my advice to it is, stay the course, be true to yourself. They're going to be really tough times when they push back. They're going to come back to your house. Often there's a re-entry tantrum. And I don't care if they're a teenager or a two-year-old. There's this sort of re-entry tantrum that they have when they get back to you. First of all, take it as a compliment. They feel safe melting down with you. Usually that's you're their safe space. So they get to you. They've had all this sort of Wild West parenting time at the other parent's house. They get back to you. Believe in your heart of hearts, kids love structure. Kids love the safety and the predictability of knowing they have to be in bed. Kids want you to hold them to it, right? To what the rules are. And you may not be the popular parent many times. It pays off in so many ways. And I've been doing this for a little over 3 years now. And just last night, I saw a payoff, my daughter doing a presentation. And this had to do more with dad, the fun house. They had gone on a vacation with the girlfriend and done family photos, all in white on the beach. Okay, first of all, that was a little gut punch, right? Because I'm like, why are you taking family photos with my daughters? They're in your family. So there's that whole facet. And then the photos were posted on there. And so I swallowed that and didn't say anything. The girls were showing me the pictures when they got home. I swallowed that. Fast forward, this was last year. My daughter had to do a class presentation and had to put family photos. And she put their photo, their quote. And now there were pictures of me in there too, and our dog and whatnot. And I was like, wow, your presentation looks great. And I had to go in my room and jump up and down and scream in my pillow. But that's okay. I didn't say a word. Last night, she did another presentation. She just got home from her dad's house from being there for almost 2 weeks, long story, but a summertime crazy schedule. She got home. She had to do another presentation since school just started. And her photos were me and her when she was little, her and I and her sister, her and her sister, her and her dog. I just went, I love your presentation. I had the same reaction, but inside I was like, yeah, so I am not a saint. I have all those same feelings, but if that's any incentive to folks out there that are just, oh my gosh, feeling that turmoil and guilt of the two households and you're trying to bite your tongue and you're trying to do the right thing and not speak ill about the other parent or, oh, all those frustrations, just hold out. And it does pay off, and you see the truth and you see the impact that you're having on their kids and just, you know.
Yeah. Good for you. Staying true to that message of, hey, you're going to be positive. You're never going to throw the other one under the bus, especially the girlfriend. And but that must've been really hard.
It is. It is. And like I said, they got home from that and it was all fun. A lot of stuff happened that I probably wouldn't allow on a vacation. You know, they got to, my 13-year-old was driving cars and my all kinds of stuff. But anyway, the point is they came home, they were safe and sound. And the big question I have, do you have any control over what happens? Zero. right? And you really have to pick your battles or you'll be exhausted. And so it's realizing you don't have control really when they go over there, aside from, you know, something illegal or abuse happening. It's a deep breath. And I had a therapist say to me once, they're going to get exposed to eating different food at dad's house. They're going to get exposed to having to be completely on their own because he expects them to be at their house from morning till night, but he works from 7 a.m. till 6 p.m. So your 13-year-old's going to be home a lot. She's going to learn how to be alone. They're going to learn how to survive, and they're going to learn how to get up in the morning and make their own breakfast and worry about if there's food for lunch. And if not, they're going to have to call their dad on it, you know? And I was like, oh my God. She was like, and you know what? There's a silver lining. They're going to be super independent, super like outspoken. You're going to help them through it when there are problems. They're going to go to their therapist. You're going to find them a good therapist. And they're going to be these super resilient kids who know how to stick up for themselves, who take care of themselves. And I was like, okay, I'm going to trust you on this, but it is happening. I have to say, I hate to admit it.
Well, that's great that they are becoming such strong women.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So you have to really look for the silver lining sometimes.
I think some other manifestations are like buying your children inappropriate or like excessive items, you know, because you maybe you want to be the fun one, or like allowing children to do things that you would otherwise say no to. Like we had just mentioned a couple examples, not setting boundaries or limitations. Or running yourself ragged to please your children, of being like the awesome parent. One other one that I think maybe doesn't come up as much or isn't thought of first is having a good time when they're not around and feeling guilty about it.
Yeah.
Like I remember definitely feeling that when my kids were with their dad and I had like whatever, 3 days, three nights, and just feeling so good about having some alone time, and but then feeling guilty that I felt good about space.
Yes.
I don't know. Have you ever felt that?
Oh, absolutely. That's such a good point. I'm glad you bring that up, because if you can wrap your head around it, because it's new when your children, right? You're going without your children for days at a time, and it's devastating at first, and it's so hard. And then if you can get to that place where you start to do things for yourself, that's so healthy and it's so good for you. And it's so important to take advantage of that time so you can recharge, because you're going to get them back and you're a single parent. You're really on when you get them. And it's really important you take advantage of that time. But you are absolutely right. There is a space where the guilt that you're having a good time, or God forbid, as it's happened to me a couple of times, I actually went out of town and was enjoying myself and got a phone call at 10 o'clock at night from my daughter, and she'd left all this stuff at my house and didn't have that, or didn't feel good and didn't want to tell dad because it was cramps, or, and I was like, I'm not there. Oh my gosh. I had the audacity to leave town. What was I thinking? You know what? I woke up the next morning, talked to her. She was like, what? Oh yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm okay, mom. What? You know, so I didn't sleep all night feeling so guilty, and woke up, called her the next day. And she was like, it's all good. I'm fine. But you know, there was that knee jerk reaction for her to call mommy when she didn't feel good. But you are absolutely right. That transition of, okay, I'm going to start to take advantage of this time alone for myself, which is important and healthy. Okay. Everybody out there, it is something you should do. But then, oh my gosh, managing the guilt of not being there just in case.
Yeah. And another thing you mentioned was, well, it's not my parenting time. But I also think that guilt creeps in when you say no. Mm-hmm. When it's not your parenting time, it's not your problem to fix.
Yeah.
And then you set the boundary of, you know, your father, your dad is the parent on duty right now. So they're the ones. And literally like saying no, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But feeling guilty about saying no.
Right.
When it's not your parenting time.
Right. And they've been used to, you know, again, if we're talking about sort of the mom, dad, a little bit more traditional situation, mom being home kind of thing, they've been used to coming to you, mom, 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 right? And you're used to answering what? And that's what normal was before. And so they're just not used to going to dad. So it's okay to practice that. To your point, it's okay to say, well, did you ask your dad? And sometimes the answer is, oh, no, I didn't. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, do you want to just try asking first? Oh, okay. You know, sometimes it's not as big of a deal in our head as we've made it. It's just a habit that needs to be broken. So you can sort of look at it that way. The other thing is my girls, you know, maybe sometimes would ask me for something and they'd say, I don't want to ask dad. I know he's going to say no. I'd say, well, okay. Well, you know, and then we talk there. Why do you think he's going to say no? Well, because X, Y, Z. Well, Did you try asking him? No. Okay. Well, do you want to practice how you're going to ask him? Okay. So then we'll role play it. Mm-hmm. And they'll ask dad and I'll get a text. He said, yes.
Yay.
Okay. All right. So there are opportunities, teaching opportunities to build skills and, you know, and that can bleed into other areas of their life. So it's looking for those little sort of starts out as guilt and you want to say yes and save to, okay, how can I turn this into a, you know, a positive.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. I love the idea of like, how can we respond in a way that helps them, but also keeps the boundary, not rushing in to like fix everything, but how can we get them to work their problem? Yeah, because I do think the silver lining is that quality time with your kids when you have had time alone to get your chores done. So like, you know, we talked about reframing the guilt into a different perspective of like, well, okay, instead of feeling guilty that you had a great alone time during your off hours, but reframe it so that you can say, now I really get to be quality when I do have them because I've gotten all my errands done. I've gotten my me time or whatever.
Yes.
And now you can be super present.
Absolutely. And let's not forget the importance of being a role model for your kids. If your marriage is over and you are now on your own, and it is a huge opportunity for you to show your children, you can be happy. It's okay to be happy. Things happen in life. Life throws you things that, you know, aren't perfect and are sad or hard, and you can overcome them. You can take advantage of opportunities like that and go out and learn new things or get a new job or do the things you always wished you had. And you can talk about those things with your kids too. It's okay. But again, looking for the silver lining or how to turn the negative into the positive or create opportunities, you are every day a role model for your kids and they're watching you like a hawk, whether you know it or not. And so again, sticking to your boundaries is awesome. They might throw a tantrum. They might say, well, dad lets me, well, mom lets me. They're going to do all of that. It's normal, right? But and it's hard. I know when they come back, and especially I know when there's situations, well, dad lets me do this and I'd rather live with him, or they're going to throw tantrums, and it's so hard. In the end, it is just reminding yourself, A, you're not alone. There's so many of us out here experiencing it, and B, it will pay off. Be true to yourself, follow your instincts, stick to your guns. It pays off 100% of the time. I truly believe that's my opinion.
I love it that you had said that being a role model really sets the example. But I also think too, that taking care of yourself means that you're just a better, more well-adjusted, happier mom, right? And that just makes happier kids. And so taking care of you is super important. I think, you know, in recognizing maybe some of the guilt that we feel as co-parents, I think just reflecting on why we're maybe making a choice, like whether it's giving them more screen time, it's like, okay, why am I doing this? This is it because of a reaction to what's going on in the other household? Or do I really feel like it's okay, you know, without even taking that into account? But reflecting on why, and then kind of going from there, and then you can kind of start recognizing, is this because I feel guilty? Or do I need to kind of revisit this issue? Or maybe even, like you mentioned, getting maybe some help and talking to a friend, or even going deeper to like a therapist.
Absolutely. And you know, Google support groups, there are so many of us out there that are all feeling this. And there is nothing like a support group, I think, you know, where you just get in, you get some airtime to talk about yourself. You listen to everyone else and think, oh my goodness, you know, wow, all these people are going through it too. And they're, you just come away feeling, again, supported, not alone. You're not the only one dealing with this. You get tips, you get advice, you get ideas, you know, or hopefully they're opening up now from what I've heard and having some in-person support groups, but I'm just a big fan of that as well.
Yeah. I do want to, though, caution people against spinning out, throwing your ex under the bus of like, kind of getting with someone who is unhelpful with like the venting session of like, rather than reflecting on what you can do, because that's really the only person you can control. Sometimes I'll find myself in a conversation with someone who's not a big fan of my ex. It kind of makes me feel worse, like way worse after a conversation like that.
It does. You know what? I actually had a conversation with a few of my friends, or I sent out a text one day and I said, I want to request that we don't speak about X, Y, and Z anymore. And even if I start, would you call me on it? I had the same experience, Bianca, where I just started to feel yucky.
Yeah.
There were a couple of things that came up. And honestly, I just wrote a blog about this. Honestly, it's switching over from getting it off your chest and processing what happened to ruminating.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a fine line that you have to be very aware of, because once you've crossed over into ruminating, you're now focused on that negative aspect of it. You're absolutely right. And you're no longer focused on positive, how looking forward, what are the steps out of this? What can I control? What can I control? As you said, and you need to be aware of that and who you either surround yourself with, or if you're not sort of putting boundaries in place and even telling your loved ones, you know what, I don't want to talk about the negative aspects of this anymore. Let's brainstorm, or this is what I'd like to focus on, you mm-hmm. know, going forward. But I literally sent a text to my friends and said, and they were all like, right on.
Yeah.
We get it.
Not helpful. We're not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
Love it.
No. And it was my fault. I was bringing it up sometimes and texting all them. Can you believe? And then I thought, oh, after a few days, I'm like, this is gross. What? This is taking up too much real estate in my head.
I know. So much wasted time, yeah. Right? Where you could have been doing something productive or whatever.
Absolutely. But that's a really good point. I completely agree.
I love that you texted your friends and asked for their help in that. So
yeah.
Yeah. So have they been pretty good since you kind of sent that out? Or because it's hard. It's hard to like reel it in.
It is because we went out for a glass of wine and one of them was like, so how's that situation going? Is it okay if I ask you that? And I said, absolutely. You could ask me. And I said, it's better. I've decided to do X, Y, Z. You know, this is how I'm looking at it. And they're like, awesome. Good for you. So again, I could even though they asked, I drove that conversation in the mm-hmm. direction that I wanted it to be. So it can still be hard, but you still have control over where a conversation goes and how you approach it and what you talk about. But yes, there is value in venting to a point to process it and get it off your chest. And then the value needs to be in looking forward. And that's in coaching where I often step in a lot, because it's basically called changing the story of your divorce into like the business of the divorce is what we call it, but it's different than that. It's going from just being wrapped up in what happened to you, right, into looking at these things and making steps going forward into where you want your mm-hmm. life to be. And you have to switch mm-hmm. over from that. And it's very difficult. I don't know, were you stuck in a situation ever where during your divorce, where you just had so much trouble getting out of spinning in that negative cycle?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it takes practice with refocusing yourself when you feel like you're going down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Where you're focused on the wrong thing. It's not helpful. It's not healthy. And you feel it, right? You feel the ickiness, the yuckiness. You can't even hardly describe what it is, but like we use those words because it's just inside, it just doesn't feel right.
Right.
But then you get better at recognizing those times and you're able to kind of refocus quicker. And I mean, I'm about the same time frame, I think, as you, where it's been about 3 years. And I feel like it's taken mm-hmm. that long to really get a little bit better at my own behavior and setting a good example. And so yes. I do think when it's super raw, it's hard. And that's why I love the high conflict divorce coaching, is because you're trained in listening, helping, redirecting, and staying positive, you know, because it can get bogged down and it can feel really hard sometimes.
Absolutely. And you're right. It takes practice, and you can't do it unless you start somewhere, and you just have to practice, and you're going to fall down and you get back up and you try it again. But back to the kids, it really takes away of your ability to be present for your children. It really does. It overtakes your mind, it overtakes your body. And so trying to really switch over into the silver lining positive. I know it sounds like la, 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 let's get but it's the honest truth. And it's, you can be more present for your kids and be there for your kids if you can either get out of that cycle or go get some help to help you get out of that cycle, for sure.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Cause it can take up a lot of real estate, like you said, in your brain. And mm-hmm. if you're focused on that, you're not focused on the things that matter, right? Like your kids,
right?
And your own health, yes. Your own mental health.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So any other thoughts about this topic before we wrap it up today, Jackie?
You know, I know this is probably for older kids, as I was thinking about this topic and I was thinking of the good ideas that I'd had or the positive experiences I had had. I'm not sure how we stumbled on it, but my daughters and I one day were talking and I had done the 5 love languages, you know, to like, if anybody hasn't seen that, you go online and there's the 5 love languages and I forget the author, apologize, but it's a free like quiz you can take. And you can do it either with a significant other sort of in mind when you take the test about yourself, or you can do it as a parent, or a child can do it if they're old enough. And so we were kind of just joking around, but my kids did it. Cause again, like I said, there's the child parent version, and they went through and answered these questions. And I was so happy we did it. I have one daughter who's super into volleyball. We have a volleyball net in the backyard. She asks me to come out and play with her all the time. And sometimes I'm like, oh my God, or I have stuff to do. And I go out and I play for like a little while. And I'm like, okay, I'm done. And her number one love language was like quality time, or like I whatever, like one-on-one doing things together with my parent. And I was like, so of all the things that we do together, taking her shopping, like, you know, whatever it is, this is the one that tells her I love her the most and that how important she is to me. Since then, every time she asked me to play volleyball with her, I have a totally different perspective on it now. You know, then maybe I'm like, you don't need another pair of tennis shoes. Okay. And because I know that her love language isn't really buying her things. I know it's one-on-one time, but now when she asked me to play volleyball, that's it. Mm-hmm. And my other daughter was like affection or something. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to make sure I hug her like every time when she leaves the house and every time when she gets home. Uh-huh. And I've noticed when I hug her, oh, she just stays there forever. So anyway, I just thought of that as a tip when we were talking about parenting and being more present and trying to get rid of the guilt we feel in so many areas of our life with parenting and co-parenting. And that was something, like I said, I know kids have to be a little older, but it was a very positive experience I had that was very eye-opening.
I love that advice. And I never really thought to do the love languages with an older child, but I think that would be a beautiful thing to do.
Yeah.
So that you can really hone in on what speaks to them.
Right. Right.
And let go of some of the guilt.
Yeah. You do focus on the things that are really important. And right.
Well, Jackie's told me that because she's been in the trenches of a high conflict divorce before, it's her passion to help others dealing with a similar difficult time, guiding them and helping them to avoid common pitfalls of a high conflict situation. So Jackie, how can people get a hold of you?
They can go to JackieMillerCoaching.com. I always have a free 30-minute discovery meeting for anyone that would like to meet with me. My phone number, my email are on the website. And you can also just book directly on the website and choose a time on my one-on-one coaching page. You can also go to outofcrazytown.com. It also just brings you to my website. And you can also listen to my podcast there as well on my podcast page. So
I know that you're busy right now with new clients. Are you still accepting new clients or?
I am still accepting new clients, and I have clients all over the country as well. So I live in Los Angeles, but it doesn't have to be Los Angeles. Pretty much the issues are similar in a lot of the cases. And so, yes, I may brush up on the law, you know, depending on where you are. I'll even help people still find attorneys and accountants and whatnot, no matter where they live. I'm still capable of doing that. So it doesn't matter where you are, I can still help.
Well, thank you so much. It was wonderful having you on the show. And thanks so much for sharing your insight and advice.
Thank you so much for having me, Bianca. It's so good to see you.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Peaceful Co-Parenting Podcast. I hope the time was well spent and you got a lot out of the episode. If so, please rate and review the podcast. I would really appreciate it. If you're interested in sending me a feedback message, asking a question, suggesting a podcast topic or guest, or downloading Peaceful Co-Parenting Messenger as a tool for better communication with your co-parent, go to peacefulparentapp.com or see the links in the show notes. Have a great week, and as always, stay peaceful.
This episode of Peaceful Co-Parent was brought to you by the Equal Shared Parenting Program. Do you find that you're ever in need of someone to talk to, like a counselor or a therapist? How about legal advice? If you've looked into it, you know these services can add up financially. That's why the Equal Shared Parenting Program exists, to help parents be their healthiest, holistic selves. It's a membership program that offers discounted and free services like behavioral health, free tax prep and advice, and access to financial education and credit counseling, all for the low price of $29.99 a month. Learn more about the Equal Shared Parenting Program by going to equalsharedparentingbenefits.org/PCPM. The PCPM stands for Peaceful Co-Parenting Messenger. That's equalsharedparentingbenefits.org/PCPM.